Okay, everybody ready? Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to the GCSD November 10th, 2020 monthly meeting. If we could all please raise our hands to salute the flag, and you can stand up, please. Okay, Jennifer.
I'm going to stand up.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Justice.
Thank you. And if Jennifer could do the roll call, please.
Director Kwiatkowski.
Present.
Director Mora.
Present.
Director Armstrong.
Present.
Director Edwards.
Present.
Director Swan.
Present.
All directors are present.
Wonderful. And can we have a approval of the agenda, please? Approve the order of the agenda.
I move to approve the agenda.
Second that.
Okay. Jennifer, do we have any messages or phone-ins, emails regarding?
Not regarding the approval of the agenda.
Okay.
Okay. It's been moved by Director Armstrong, seconded by Director Swan to approve the order of the agenda. I'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong?
Yes.
Director Edwards?
Yes.
Director Swan?
Aye.
And the motion carries unanimously.
Thank you. Public comment. Members of the public are appreciated for taking the time to attend the meeting and to provide comments on matters of district business. Jennifer, do we have any public comments?
I have not received any public comment, and I just want to double check with Rachel that she hasn't.
No, I have not either.
Okay, we will close public comments. Information items.
Janice, I would just check on for people who are logged on, just do a double check to see if anybody
who's... Is there anybody that has joined the meeting that would like to comment on anything? No? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, information items. The first item up will be the staff reports, fire department report. Andy Murphy is here with us today.
Good morning. Andy Murphy, Assistant Chief. I just wanted to go over the monthly report for the group. And there were several incidents last month of note. Really, I think, again, we need to try to recruit some maybe volunteers or have these folks sign up as interns, as they, many of the property owners are putting out the fires before we get there. So that's a good thing. That they're able to do that safely. As I think we mentioned last month, engine 783, the CAL FIRE engine, that surplus engine is now in service. And engine 788 was taken out of service. We're working on a plan of what to do with that engine now that it's out of service, moving the equipment from that engine to the new engine. Engine 783 is a CAL FIRE, what's called a Model 15. It's got a hydrostatic fire pump, and it is a two-wheel drive fire engine, but it's a Type 3 engine. And that will be used in place there of 788. Training, again, the guys are always doing training. It's a constant, as most of you know, in the fire service, for them to stay up on their skills and to learn new skills, as things are always improving and developing in the fire service. And then there's also a note there about the trunk or treat they were able to participate in. Fortunately, many of those events were canceled, as you probably are aware, around the county, but Groveland was able to pull that off, so that's a good thing. It's always important to be able to, and we're trying to find new ways to provide a public safety message and prevention education message to the public. Just in Jamestown a couple of weeks ago, we were able to do a virtual fire station tour. You know, typically we get several of those classes that come through the fire stations each year. And we were able to do that virtually with COVID restrictions. So still able to, you know, everybody loves fire stations and fire engines and that. So we're able to do that. Also on the last, almost the last page of the report, you'll see that the new breathing apparatus arrived and they're placed in service. It's the Scott self-contained breathing apparatus that we were able to purchase through the grant, the FEMA Assistance to Firefighters grant that was awarded last year. And it was, the grant amount was $554,091. It was 90% of the total cost, with the other 10% being made up by the applicants, which is Groveland, CSD, Jamestown, and County Fire. So Groveland CSD was able to get 12 new breathing apparatus right in time, as the ones that we got 10 years ago on the grant were expiring at the end of this year. So it was very, very timely, very fortunate that we got the grant. The cost is about $6,200 each. That includes a spare bottle, so that 90% of that cost is being absorbed by the grant. And I think the total cost for the 12 breathing apparatus is just about $7,600 to the district. That's the 10%. So that was planned for, of course, something we've discussed in the past, but it's a huge, huge, huge thing that we're able to get those funds for that grant. These are also a little bit bigger. I'd say bigger, but they last longer. There's more air in them. So the firefighters are able to perform their duties inside of these dangerous environments for a longer period of time. Also on the last page, you'll see the 49 incidents for the month. Right about a little above average of the five-year response calls, but it certainly is. We've seen as county fires call volume is starting to decrease a little bit. Groveland's has maintained and is actually still increasing a little bit each month over a previous year. So I think we're seeing, despite COVID, we're still seeing the traffic and the public moving through. So that is it for my report, unless there's any questions.
I really appreciate the graph.
Great news on the grant. Thank you for updating us with that. Fabulous. Go ahead, Pete.
Well, I was just saying that I really appreciate the graph, the five-year graph by month like that. Those will be really helpful.
Excellent. I'll continue to try to do that.
I know.
Yeah.
That grant is pretty awesome. And those bottles are huge. Those are the ones that we used to have on trucks. Those are big bottles.
Yeah. They're what it's called 45-minute SCBAs. They really don't last that long. Of course, if you're stationary and not moving around, of course, when they're wearing them, they're swinging axes or dragging hoes. So maybe 30 minutes is probably what should be expected out of them. But the other ones were more like 20 minutes, 25 minutes. Then they have to come out and get a new bottle. So it really enables them to stay in there longer.
30-minute bottle.
Yeah. I just wanted the quick note, the other grants that we applied for, so far we haven't been awarded. I haven't heard on the SAFER grant yet for the additional staffing, but the other grants for the radios through FEMA and the Assistant Firefighter grants, we got the turn down notice. But we will be reapplying for those and bringing those items back to the board to apply again.
Wonderful. Okay, thank you, Chief. Have we had any comments from the email, Jennifer or Rachel? No? Okay. Any comments from anybody that's present today? Other than kudos to the fire department? Okay, thank you very much, Chief Andy. Moving on. I forgot one quick note here. We need to all be aware of the 11 o'clock timed agenda item with our accountant. And so if we're in the middle of something, we'll try to get through it real quick. If we haven't started it yet, we'll just wait. And we need to be able to get them in and out when their time comes. And also, I have an appointment in Sonora this afternoon, so we're going to have a nice speedy meeting, everybody, okay? And yay. Okay, thank you. Next item, General Manager's Report.
Also, Janice, I have to pick up wee ones at 1 o'clock, at 1:15, so I have to leave at 1 o'clock again.
Perfect. That works. That works. Rachel, did you want to say something? Okay.
Sorry, just waving my hand around again.
No problem. Okay. Mr. Campa, it's your turn.
Okay. This is going to be a relatively short discussion just because, again, most everything that I deal with comes out as an agenda item. And as far as the report goes, the what's included in your packet is fairly simple, but I wanted you to be aware of it. There is a cert flyer and information document that are included in the packet that are being distributed now, and those are becoming more known and prevalent in the communities, and want to make sure that the board is up to speed, that we're moving that along, and we have Carol Hallett and Bob Asquith on here. Again, it wasn't intended to be an agenda item for any particular action unless the board wants to put it on a future agenda to get either more information or have it as a regular routine report from CERT on the agenda, which might not be a bad idea, and we can talk about that just so that we've actually got it on the agenda. But they're doing a great job of organizing. We collectively went to a briefing session, an overview about CERT and what to prepare for, what to be aware of. And it was really helpful for me from a management perspective to understand some of the needs and some of the opportunities with CERT, as well as how to get it all together and package it and make sure that the district, who is the sponsoring entity, has that it's integrated into our services versus taking on its own life and being its own thing, that we don't have any input or I don't want to say the word control, because it's not really a control thing. It's just that we've set parameters on what the expectations are and what the opportunities are for CERT and everything else. And so does anyone have any concerns with this particular information that's going out on the street? It does outline some things that CERT locally will be doing potentially participating in. And it's a wide variety of stuff. I see a bunch of smiling but nodding faces. So, Bob, you want to jump in?
Yes, Robert Asquith.
Just wanted to let you know one aspect of this. Carol and I went to firefighter training for Columbia College Fire Academy a week and a half ago, and I was struck by the firefighter rehab process. Basically, after firefighters have been in a building or in a fire for a certain length of time, they have to come out and they have to be rehabbed. And the rehab is checking their vital signs, making sure, excuse me, making sure that they are recording what those are, and then waiting 10 minutes and doing it again before they go back into service. Also, it involves helping them wipe down their gear and so forth. The key thing, my takeaway, is that if CERT is not there to do that, and we are certified to do that, if we're not there to do that, then firefighters have to do it, which means that it takes them away from fighting the fire and the things that they can do. So we look forward to that. We have acquired a vehicle, and we'll see if that meeting tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock at GCSD to review that with CAL FIRE and see how we can put that into service. So that'll be something that's coming down the line, and that should make a big difference.
Great information. I wanted to, if you could touch base on the online course that people can take for certification.
Yes, it's available right now. It was developed by the state of Utah and the University of Utah, and it was agreed to, or it was certified by FEMA. It's an online course, and currently you can take that course, and then we're planning on November 21st, most of the day practical session to complete training. That'll be November 21st in Mary Lavaroni Park. We have a Facebook page if anybody's interested, and it's just look for CERT Groveland. We also have an email address, which is grovelandcert@gmail.com. grovelandcert@gmail.com. So if you have any questions or want to participate, send us an email. We'll connect you up.
Wonderful. Thank you. Yes, Carol, you're, please.
Just to add to that, Bob, I've ordered the manuals for anybody who wants to take that online course. So I have plenty of those, both for Twain Hart as well as for Groveland. So we need to get together to make sure that people have those as they're going through the course. We've had multiple people already take the course, and they felt like it was really a fantastic collaboration of putting all the information together and actually condensing it so it's not quite as long. So I think we can get more people trained. There's two reasons why you want to get people trained in CERT. One is for their own personal preparedness. So a lot of people might take this course just to get more prepared for when an emergency happens so that they can take care of themselves and their families better. And then the other reason is if somebody wanted to take that next step and actually volunteer and help out in the different aspects that we in Groveland decide we need to support our first responders and our community. So that's kind of where it all sits.
Well, and I would add that when Chief Murphy talked about sometimes the fires are put out before people get there, that's one of the aspects of the training is how to put out a fire.
That's good.
Sounds like wonderful information that everybody should have or have someone on their block that knows how to do this stuff. Yes, Director Spencer.
I appreciate the information, and you guys know that GCSD is here to help. I just wondered what kind of information has been put out at the Pine Mountain Lake Association meetings. Is this same kind of information being put out there?
There hasn't been a meeting that's appropriate to put it out yet. They're in the budget cycle, but yes, there's a meeting coming up on the 21st, and we'll make sure that it's presented there.
That's great, Bob. I had a feeling you were going to say that, because there's a lot more people attend those meetings, and they're a lot more boisterous, I guess. And you get the information out to the folks, and we'll get some more people involved in CERT. And I want to thank you for everything you guys are doing very much.
You bet. At some point, maybe we can, by the time we get to spring and so forth, and then set up a next class, maybe we can talk about putting some information in with one of your billings. Kind of a newsletter.
Hey, okay. Look forward to it.
Also, I think it's appropriate that I'll get a copy of that training manual and deliver it to GCSD Global Headquarters. So there's one on file that you guys can look at.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
Makes us feel important when you call it Global Headquarters.
Yes. Could have been intergalactic.
It's very much appreciated. I think this, marriage between GCSD, GCSD Fire and CERT is fantastic opportunity. We're going to need the public understanding going forward of the fire department and the needs and what we provide and what's available and everything else. So this is a great venue for the community. And so I would like to suggest that we have a spot on the agenda for just a quick report of activities and what's going on, just so that we keep that relationship going forward.
Very cool. Thank you.
So thank you both. The other item for quick discussion is that the final environmental impact report is out on the Under Canvas project. There is a planning commission meeting on the 18th at 4 p.m. where they will be considering approval of the final environmental impact report. And I can tell you the county did put a lot of effort into evaluating and responding to the concerns that we raised related to providing services outside the district boundaries, outside of our response area, and to these projects that are located 17 to 25 miles away from our fire station, and how that impacts us. It's going to take me the rest of the week to get through the review of this. We're also in discussion with our legal team to make sure that they understand and agree with where we are on this before the Planning Commission meeting next Thursday, where I will undoubtedly be attending and presenting in some manner. I just don't know exactly how the response is going to be, because I'm not really clear on exactly what some of the items mean in the response to comments in the final environmental impact report. I'm being a little bit vague on it just because we're not, it's not an agenda item today. There's no action to take as a result of it. I just want to let you know it is available. You can review it. I'll be providing a briefing. If we need a special board meeting to take any type of action before Thursday, you'll certainly hear about that. That's pretty much about it. But the county did do an extensive job of responding to the concerns.
Thank you, Pete. You're the...
Just to be clear, that's the 18th. You said this is 4 o'clock on the 18th?
Yes. It is. It's by Zoom as well. So it's a virtual public hearing such as our meeting is here. So.
And Pete, my understanding is that everybody gets 3 minutes. Their comments are limited to 3 minutes.
Yeah, I honestly, if it takes 3 minutes to get the comments out or more than that, then my comments will certainly be within 3 minutes, no doubt. But I'm not sure exactly what they are yet. I can't describe it just because there's a lot of moving parts right now. There may be thousands of pages of documents related to the project, but in reality, there's probably only about 50 of them that relate to the issues under GCSD's interest right now. So, just trying to focus on those. Anyway, we'll do it all over again with Terra V too. I'm sure that'll be coming up right after that. But it is going well with the county.
Thank you, Pete. Appreciate it. And I'm sure you will you've got the knowledge to read that stuff and get through the things that aren't important, where I would just be dragging through the 100 pages you said there were that it includes. So thank you again. Any director comments on anything? Any other comments? Any members of the public on any general manager comments, Jennifer? No.
I do have Pete, you said the EIR was available. Is that on the county's website? Is that where it is?
We can send a link. Rachel, if you can remind me after the meeting to get that link and send it out. I've downloaded all the documents. They're fairly large in size, so they're hard to distribute by email. But they're easily accessed.
I can send a link to Bob right now in his email if you'd like.
That'd be great. I mean, we can get it out to all the directors.
Yeah, I would like one too, if that's...
I'll do it right now.
Again, I can tell you, focus your attention on the staff report that introduces the final environmental impact report, and there's a section that details the changes from the draft environmental impact report to the final, and then there's another document that's specific to responses to comments, where they specifically addressed each and every letter that they received and reference sections of the EIR. So it's cross-linked really well. It's easy to follow. That response to comments is probably the first place to start, because that's where our letter is specifically addressed by them, by section of the EIR. So good stuff. I'm looking around for Janice. I don't see her.
Yeah, she's
we have lost Madam President momentarily.
Madam Vice President?
Yes.
Do we care to call for the next agenda item?
Sure. Let me switch over here.
Look how quickly we just move through the technology.
You guys are smooth.
I believe the next agenda item is for Louis' report. Am I correct?
You are the operation report.
All right. Well-oiled machine.
Yes, well-oiled, that's for sure. all right, my report, I'm going to keep it short. We had, in October, we had the biosolids hauled off this year with the way the staff dried it and had that. We actually dropped the weight by half, or maybe a little under half. And so Greg was really excited about that, but I noticed that he's not on to give all the details. But I think the cost was around half of what we spent last year as well. So it was good, less smell and less money to get it hauled off. So that was good. We had two water breaks. We had a 10-inch main that fills tank 4 break during, I believe it was Thursday of last week. And we had a service line out there off of Rock Canyon that broke. Both of those were repaired and back in service with little impact to people. We completed 6-month audit on our 0 read meters, and we actually had 4 that came back that needed to be replaced. So that was a good thing as well. Tank 2 project went very well. They got all of it set up to consolidate to one generator instead of having 2 at that site. They did find a problem with the transfer switch, and then we actually have to get that repaired before it could be 100% operational. It had a bad controller, so that's actually scheduled to be repaired this week on Thursday, and then that project will be complete and everything will be up to par. There was actually some wiring issues as well for the block heater and the battery charger for the generator that we switched over to, so they had to repair that as well. So that's going to be all taken care of on Thursday. Last week we had smart covers installed, and what that is, that actually are devices that hang from underneath the lid of manholes. We have 5 of those now, and they actually monitor levels inside the manhole and the flow going through the manhole. So we actually have the ability to look these devices up on our computers sitting at our desk, or an app on our phone that will actually send us alarms on high level events, or maybe just a change in the flow in the manhole itself, and something just like a abnormal to what the flow typically is, it'll actually send you an advisory report saying, hey, you might want to check it out. So we just went through the training on that so we can pull data and all that stuff. And it's minute by minute. So it's really, really cool stuff to see that. And we have these devices We put three of the five right in the lift station five area because that's our station that seems to have the most trouble during wet weather events. So we're going to see if we can get some good information on that for maybe a way to track down where we're getting some inflow and infiltration from events. So other than that, that is it.
All right. Anybody on the call have any questions or comments?
I got just on the biosolids ballpark. I mean, that's fairly expensive hauling that stuff off. So, I mean, what's the general range that we're talking about?
Well, this year with testing of the biosolids is actually fairly expensive as well. And this is in this total. It was like 4,500. I don't have the exact numbers, so don't quote me on this, but it's like 4,500 and some change. And I think last year it was almost 11. So it's a good significant change. So,
I mean, the reason I mention it is just this is the payback for the sludge drying area work that we had, you know, that we capitalized last year, whenever it was that it was done. So, you know, it'll take a while, but we're getting some return on that investment already.
Yes, definitely. No, it worked out well too, how they stored it for the winter, and they didn't have to touch it all summer long until we actually hauled it off, and then that's when they moved it. So we didn't have to disturb it and put that smell out into the public as well. So that's just something that we're trying to work in progress. And Greg's really excited about this, and he thinks that he could keep it around that $4,000, maybe to $5,000 range moving forward. So. And I think the testing alone was about $2,500 or $2,400 of that. So it's $70 a ton, I believe, to have it hauled off. So,
yeah. John.
What are they actually testing for, Louis?
It's, what can I think right now?
Sorry.
Caught me off guard there. Bacteria. It's the back T samples. I'm drawing a blank. Sorry.
Okay, you can get back to me.
I will. Coliform, there you go. I couldn't think of it. It's coliform, there you go.
Well, that makes all the difference in the world. Now I didn't know exactly what that is. Thanks, yeah. Louis.
And they also, don't they also have, it's obviously a moisture content too?
They do have a moisture content, but they don't really like look at that too much. You do got to pull the samples from the driest areas of the pile, but you can have it hauled off wet. And that's kind of what we did last year. And it cost us a lot, but yeah, they use this for land applications. So they test nutrients as well. So like metals and all that kind of stuff. So nitrites, nitrates, and yep.
I know that it wasn't specifically addressed in Louis' discussion there, but he did a lot of work in going back through all of the design information that was part of the sewer collection system renovation project, and verifying that since that evaluation that we did was from 2014, 2015, and 2016. And now we are doing the final design and getting ready to go to bid on that $5.8 million project, that we're actually addressing the areas that are of greatest concern to us, because there have been some changes in our system that have occurred even since the time that it was evaluated four and 5 years ago. And we need to make sure that those get included in this project, even if it throws the budget out of whack, just because we need to address all of the major areas. And so Louis went around and verified that areas that they're having trouble are included in that design. We haven't exactly detailed how much that's going to add to the project, if it does. But did a great job of making sure that we're building the right project coming up. And we are in the middle of design on that, and we'll have plans and specs in probably around January, I think, for approval for the board, so we can go out to bid. And really, that's an exciting project. And thanks, Louis. He's working on a number of different things all at once.
Yeah, it's been crazy with the projects and getting information over to Alfonso and his team and just dealing with all that stuff. It's been great, though. It's good.
Yeah, we had the kickoff coordination meeting with the with FAR Construction for the Big Creek and Second Grody Clearwell rehab project. We did get state approval, so that's moving forward. Louis, did they do a site visit today, or are they?
It's at 1 o'clock today. They sent an email yesterday afternoon, and they said one today. So hopefully they show up, and we can take them out to all three of the sites. So,
yeah, because we gotta look at staging, how things are going to stage out, and when they're going to start what, and then we will have a schedule that'll be put together probably early next week. We'll circulate that with the board just for information at this point. It's not something that we want to put out and advertise in the public because schedules change. But we just want to at least have you aware of when the contractor will be where. And it's a big project. It's going to go on for quite a while.
Louis.
Yes.
I noticed the build consumption for the water. It went up 2 million gallons from last year.
Let's see here.
That was crazy. Mm-hmm.
Yes, indeed. I know we have it there. Yep.
Well, the weather was still nice through most of October, so.
Yes. Yeah, and we had more people up here. More people up here full time.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's still like the COVID thing still happening a lot, and then because you look at the commercial as well, it was down from
right. So. Yeah, and they were restricted, so more restricted. So, yeah, wow, crazy. Good for you guys. I liked your report. It was really nice. Did anybody else have any comments on the report, questions for Louis?
It's just interesting how because of the COVID, the residential water went up, but the commercial went down. That's true.
Well, the bars are closed, so no dine-in restaurants and all that good stuff. Okay, thank you. Was there any, Jennifer, any comments on this from the public? Nope, okay. Anybody else here that's present today want to make a comment? Okay. Thank you, Louis. Moving on to the Administrative Service Manager's report.
Okay, so I have been in contact with Bill Morton of Municipal Finance Corporation. He's the gentleman who worked to refinance our sewer bond last December. Internally, especially with COVID right now, the interest rates are really low. And so the district wanted to look into the feasibility of refinancing the two water bonds to take advantage of the low interest rates that are occurring right now. Last night at 9:30, Bill Morton had sent me the refunding analysis for the two bonds. We haven't had the opportunity to set up a meeting yet, but it looks like there's going to be a significant cost savings if we were to refinance the two water bonds. And what our goal was when talking with Bill was to combine the two into one and then to have that refinance completed by December, which is prior to our biannual payment that would be due in January. So we wanted to get those refinanced before December. So we will be back in December with that item on the agenda if it looks like it's going to be a significant cost savings. The documents are a little difficult to understand and read exactly. So hopefully Deborah and I and even Pete will be able to meet with him by the end of this week sometime and get a better idea of what that cost savings looks like. Sorry, did somebody say something?
I said very cool.
Oh yeah, it will be. Pete and I, we have been continuing to make forward progress with the Hetch Hetchy Trail project, not just as looking into opportunities, to keep advancing that project forward. So we had a conversation with Hetchy, gosh, about almost a month and a half, 2 months ago. And it was for that one, they have this 1% that they have to reinvest back into the communities that they do, that they perform work in. It's specifically their contractors and stuff. And so after that meeting, what we had taken away from it was a lot of this work is like not construction work, but pro bono work for consultants who produce, you know, or who perform engineering type services, potentially grant writing. So out of that meeting, Pete compiled a list of, we call it a request for assistance. And it was in the different areas that we could really use some somebody's assistance. And then they, Hetchy will then send that out to their partners or the people that they work with and allow them to decide whether or not that would be a good fit for meeting this requirement that they have by working with San Francisco. So we haven't heard back from them yet on that, but that has been sent off. We also, there is a Sierra Nevada Conservancy Vibrant Recreation and Tourism Grant that is really ideal for this project specifically. And I reached out to our representative in the area, Michael Pickard, because part of the grant, this grant program, is that you work with a person with SNC and through the whole process, and they will determine if your grant is or your project would be compliant with the grant guidelines and if it would be, you know, just a good project for funding through the grant. So we have a meeting scheduled this Thursday actually to go over that with the SNC. So that would be if our project is ideal for funding, it's a really good program because this Hetch Hetchy Trail project really checks every box for the guidelines for that grant. We also, the impact fee study that MBS is performing for the district, we completed the initial data request that they had. So it was a significant amount of information compiling that we completed. And so MBS has that. They responded with a couple of follow-up questions, but so that the impact fee study continues to move forward. And then lastly, our Springbrook conversion. We have a meeting with Springbrook representatives on the 12th, so this Thursday, to go over our kickoff meeting with them and lay out the whole process for the migration over to the cloud-based version. And we look to go start the transition to go live December 10th through the 14th. And we'll run the two systems simultaneously together, but during that time when we're migrating over to the cloud version, the district will not be able to process any payments at all for those few days. So the district has already put a kind of a notice on the billing, just letting customers know that through that time frame we're going to be going through a software upgrade and that we won't be able to take payments. And then we will also, we plan on sending out a mass phone call to all of our customers as well, posting it on the internet. When I went through this a few years ago, when we did the previous upgrade, getting the word out to the public about payments and maybe glitches was really beneficial. And so we'll definitely utilize Ronnie for that as well, because you know, we don't want any of our customers getting frustrated with this process. So we're doing our best to make sure that as best we can, that everybody's well aware of it and to be patient with us while we go through this. So hopefully it's a smooth process. One of the good things about this is that it's essentially going to be all housed with Springbrook. So there can't be so much of a, well, it's on your end because of your server. So hopefully that will eliminate those glitches and technical problems we've had in the past with housing Springbrook on our own server. And then that's my report. I don't know if anybody has any questions. Okay.
Lots of exciting stuff. Thanks for the updates. I know that Deborah is going to be looking forward to the Springbrook update. She's going to have to teach somebody how to use it. So maybe it'll be easier. Moving on to item B, proclamations, recognition of Debbie Prococo for her 10 years of service to the Groveland Community Service District. Hooray!
Hey, yeah.
Hey.
Yes. Wow. She will, on November 17th, it will be her 10 years of service to the Groveland Community Services District. So quite a milestone. And Debbie is she's an extremely valuable employee. She has her retirement plan for a year from now. So it's going to be, she's definitely not replaceable, but we're trying to do our best to figure out how to, move forward with her, not going to be with us any longer. So she's, Debbie is a people that work with her, she's fun, she's funny, she's witty, she's smart, she's totally got the brain of a bookkeeper. she speaks a different language than most of us. Mm-hmm. And she's a wonderful person, she's a wonderful employee. She's been, it's been an honor to work with her and learn from her. She's been a great mentor to the many people that we have brought into the district over the years. She's by far the best trainer of new staff that I've ever had. She's just got patience and a way to really get people where they need to be. And so we're all very, very grateful to her and recognize her commitment and service to the district.
That's wonderful. Gosh, she's a nice person. We don't get to mingle with her often, but she's always friendly and happy to go sign checks and stuff every time she calls.
Yeah, she definitely delivers the goods to put me to work. That's for sure. She knows how to get me to take care of something right away. It's like everywhere I turn, it shows up. Emails first thing, emails last thing, 3 days in advance so that she knows she'll get it done. And anyway, it has been a pleasure to have her around and learn from her and work with her and see her grow such a wonderful admin staff with good financial skills.
Yes, that can be hard to fill. Well, good for her. Please pass on the congratulations from all the board members.
Will do.
Okay. Recognition of Andrew Marshall for his promotion to the C&D lead. Louie, what is the C&D lead?
Well, Louie jumped out at just the right minute, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you what I know of Andrew and
what's
going on here. The intention was from the beginning to set up the structure where there's advancement opportunities for the staff that perform and excel and constantly learn and are leaders within the group. And Andrew's been that from the very beginning. He's has not been with the district that long, but has really picked things up, really takes on responsibility and is moving things forward. He is, when we brought in Adam, he's been jumped in as Adam's right-hand person from the very beginning, doing a great job, good communicator, and has a respect to the staff. And so the lead person basically is the person who is the go-to in the field, with Adam being the superintendent. Adam is the coordinator and make sure that the quality occurs right, cracks all the time, make sure there's accountability and all that, that we meet our service standards. And Andrew is the one who has to deliver that. So Drew is the right person for that spot and works really well with the whole crew. So it's much appreciated that he's there.
Wonderful. Please pass on that and for congratulations. Louie, you missed out on that.
I could not get my
my mute button to work for some reason. I apologize for that.
Yeah, that's okay.
Did I miss
you? Have anything you wanted to add, Louie?
No, Pete summed it up very well. Drew has been excellent since he started here, and he's just showed initiative and drive, and he takes this job with pride. So that's huge for us. And to move him into that spot, he didn't hesitate. He was ready for it. He was biting at the bit. So I think he's going to be the man. He'll be here for a while, and I think we made a good choice.
Good. Pass along congratulations.
Will do.
Will.
Hey, can I say one more thing about the testing of the biosolids by chance?
Oh, absolutely.
So I had Greg send me the stuff, and it was, they test for metals, John. They test for a total fecal, which is the coliform. They test for nitrogen, ammonia, nitrates, potassium, pH, and the metals they look for is nickel, selenium, zinc, copper, lead, and there's a few other ones in there as well. And Boss Man was right with the percent solids. We have to be over the 15%, and we were at 93 this year. So good stuff. Anyways.
Good.
They use that as like fertilizers.
They do actually. They land application, and they go into fields. So, and I think that's a big thing about the fecal part of it. So, I know we have to be under 2 million. This year we're at 174.8 on our fecal count. So we are definitely under the 2 million. So,
good. We have healthy numbers.
Yeah. So the tomatoes growing and that stuff we could probably eat. It's good. Okay.
Yummy.
Okay. Does anybody have anything else to add at this point? Any comments from the public, Jennifer? Okay. We've got everybody going here. Okay. Consent calendar.
I move that we approve the ascent calendar. I mean, consent calendar.
I'll second that.
Any comments from other directors? Mm-mm. Okay. Any comments from the public, Jennifer?
No.
No. Okay.
So it's been moved by Director Armstrong, seconded by Director Swan to approve the consent calendar. I'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong?
Yes.
Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
The motion carries unanimously.
Hooray! Old business. We're going to have a Should we have a quick discussion here, Pete, or has our person joined?
Let's go ahead.
Okay. Item 5, old business, discussion of options to provide law enforcement within the district boundaries. Spencer, that's something you had brought up at a prior meeting. Did you have any
comments? Actually, as a director, I think it's one of our responsibilities to bring to the board things that constituents say to us. Now, I've had a couple of different constituents come to me with being concerned about the lack of law enforcement in Groveland Community Services District. And just when I started thinking about that, to bring it to the board, I was reading that the sheriff wasn't able to fund the deputy at the school as often as they had been in the past. And so there is a definite lack of law enforcement here in Groveland Community Services District. Then about the same time, I hear on next door that somebody on Jackson Mill heard some shots and watched a guy carry a deer from the edge of the golf course, put it in the back of his truck and drive off. Lady says, well, who do I call? It's a fair question. Now, I don't know how to start law enforcement. I don't know how to fund law enforcement, but I do take it seriously that as a director, it's my responsibility to bring it to the other four directors that there are constituents out there that feel like there isn't enough law enforcement here in GCSD. The thing about that is if the law-abiding people know there's not enough law enforcement, the people who do illegal things know that there's not enough law enforcement too and continue to do it. So having said that, I don't even know how to proceed with something like this. However, I do feel it's my responsibility to let you other four directors and Pete, our general manager, know that the constituents out there don't feel there's enough law enforcement. And as a community services district, we can provide law enforcement. I don't know how to go about doing it, but I do know that community services districts can do it. So at that point, I'll turn it over to you, Janice, to, you know, how we want to handle this from now on. But I just feel as a director, it's my responsibility to announce to the other four directors what the constituents are saying to me out there on the street.
Sure, absolutely. I haven't heard anything about, I've heard concerns and not having a presence of a sheriff in this area is definitely noticeable. And when something happens, as in gunfire or any issues, it's a long way for the sheriff to come. So Pete, we're gonna let you chime in on this.
I'll just give you a little background on the process. We are authorized under the government code to provide law enforcement and or security services. And that occurs basically through this process that we're talking through right now. There would be the potential identified need for additional services. And then that is the next step in the process would be and I'm going to set funding off to the side right now, okay? Mm-hmm. Because funding is obviously the key. We could do anything with a bunch of money within the law. But setting funding aside, the process would go to LAFCO, and it would be a request to activate a latent power, and the police powers or security powers or latent power. And it would involve having a financial plan, a business plan, how we're going to deliver it, how it's going to interact with the county sheriff, that type of stuff. And LAFCO would, if things were in place that, it seemed financially viable and there was a public interest, the LAFCO would likely take action to approve proceeding with implementing that latent power. And then we would be able to staff a police department. It would be similar to the fire department. It would be a fire chief under my direction, or a police chief under my direction. Police departments are extremely expensive because you have to have the coverage and the rotation. It's similar to like a fire department having two people on all the time requires five people in total, just so that you've got the coverage, you've got the backup, you've got holidays and weekends and vacations and sick leave covered, and you can always have enough staff. So there's some significant financial resources that are expended as part of that. There is no specific source of funding. In other words, just because we decide to provide law enforcement ourselves doesn't mean that all of a sudden now there's a bunch of money that the county is going to give us to provide that higher level of service. It's possible that there could be some type of an arrangement where the county doesn't have to come here because we have the law enforcement service. However, there would be a lot of calls outside the district boundaries, so the sheriff's coming anyway. So a lot of logistics to work out and financing. There are a number of community services districts that do provide law enforcement services. Some of them are in rural communities. For example, Stallion Springs down in Tehachapi area does provide law enforcement. But they were formed to provide those services. So there was a funding mechanism in place, a special tax in place to be able to provide those services as well. So the main thing is to go out and see if there's an interest in the community. That would be the first direction from myself would be if there was interest on the part of the board to go out into the community to see if there's an interest in the community for that level of service using some means. And it would be tied to the public's interest in funding that service as well. Because there, everybody might say, yeah, let's enhance law enforcement. But when it comes to, a large assessment to do that, they may lose interest. But that's something that we can certainly go out and see. At this point, I'm a little bit, until we get through the fire funding issue, I'm a little hesitant to put anything out on the street that might compete with it, asking for a tax for police and asking for a tax for fire, or even talking about a tax or funding mechanism for police might create some confusion right now. Perhaps maybe next July, July 2021, we get through the fire measure and see how that goes, and then pick it up with a survey.
Go ahead, John.
Thanks.
I agree with Director Edwards. I think that it's needed, definitely needed in this district. I've had incidents at my property that required law enforcement. It took them over an hour to get there. Luckily, I have defense of my own, but that's something you have to have up here. And I think it's something we really ought to look into, whether or not this community can afford it or will want to afford it. That's another story, but we really ought to look into it. I agree 100% with Director Edwards. Mm-hmm.
Any other directors have any comments?
Please yeah. Don't misunderstand. It's not a personal thing that I'm bringing to the board. This is things that people who live around here have said to me. That's why I'm bringing it to the board. I would never bring something that I personally want without prompting from constituents that, in all actuality, I work for.
Yes, but remember, you're a constituent too. So
yes, ma'am, I am.
Being a resident, you can speak to the board at a meeting regarding issues that concern you. Yeah. So I do agree with Pete that we should probably wait until after the fire measure has, keep your fingers crossed, passed, and we've got the fire department set up for future. And our 11 o'clock person, Pam, has arrived. So we will, yes, Carol, please, quickly.
So I want to thank everybody for allowing me to sit in today. I'm going to sign off now, but I'm always here for you in regards to CERT and answering any questions at any time. And I do look forward to working with all of you in building up the CERT team in Groveland. Thanks.
Thank you for attending. We appreciate it. Bob.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Bob? Just one quick comment on that. So I understand there's no doubt that the law enforcement response time up here is extremely erratic and generally slow. When we are looking into this, and I agree that we should wait until the fire measure is resolved, one of the things that I'd like to see us talk to the county, or actually talk to the sheriff about, it's not the county because the sheriff is not the county exactly, if there'd be a way of funding more of a sheriff presence up here. And one of my reasons for saying that is I really don't necessarily think that we want to get into the police department business. Sitting on SDRMA where they, we do insure a few agencies that have police departments. What am I trying to say? The liability exposure is something that I think we'd like to avoid and let the sheriff take care of that and maybe just pay for better service. But that's all. Okay. Something to.
John.
Yeah, Bob, on Bob's comment, I think Sonora hires a Tuolumne County sheriff. I know that Lafayette in Contra Costa hires Contra Costa sheriff. So their vehicles stay Sonora police, Lafayette police, but they are sheriff people that are you know, personnel that are manning the vehicles and stuff like that.
Okay, so but
that can be done.
We need to remember, we don't have a town of Groveland. We have no city income. We have no city tax coming in that can be used to purchase this outside person to come in.
Anything you're going to do would have to involve a special tax. I mean, there's no, you know, obviously, right.
Well,
you know,
and
whatever the mechanism would be.
Yeah, we're already paying a tax for the sheriff. So I'd like to see his presence here without us having to pay more. But this is going to have to be a future conversation because we need to get onto the financial statement. We don't want to keep Pam waiting any longer. If that's okay with everybody, we'll table this again. Do we want to table it, Jennifer, or it wasn't an...
If there's still needed or further discussion needed, then yes. I don't know if everybody was in agreement to... revisit it after a fire tax measure if there was still interest.
Okay, real quick, does everybody agree to table it until after the fire tax?
Okay.
Yeah.
I think so.
Okay, we've got five nods here and a couple waves. Another wave. Okay. So, and Pete does too. So. Okay, so we will table this for further discussion this summer. And we will move on to item F, timed agenda to be presented. Presentation of the district's audited financial statements for the fiscal year 2019-2020 by Gilbert and Associates. Welcome, Pam.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Should I share my screen? Is that what you think would be best to show the audit report?
Jennifer?
Okay. I could try to point you out as I go page number, but it might be easier for me to actually show you on the screen. So my name is Pam Saylor. I work for Gilbert CPAs. My firm consults with Groveland to help with the financial close and help prepare draft financials for the audit. And we work directly with the auditor as well. Ryan Jolly is the auditor, but I've been asked by management to go through the audit report and the financial statements. If you have any questions while I'm going through, please feel free to stop me or wave or what you gotta do, and I'm gonna try to help and answer your questions as we go through. So let me see if I can share my screen properly. Oh, I can't share my screen.
Hang on.
I don't have the feature disabled to allow participants to share. I mean, I don't have it enabled.
Okay, I will. I just want to make sure I don't log out of this meeting as part of this. So hang tight just one second. I was just there not long ago. And it is in settings.
If you can share your screen too, if you'd like to go that way, if this won't work.
And then it will work. It's just a matter of if I can get to it without a huge delay. So many settings now.
Yes.
It's just, whiteboard, annotation, screen sharing. Let's see if that now allows you to. If it doesn't,
nope.
Okay, it'll do it on the next one, I'll bet you.
But that doesn't matter to you. Okay, so let me get to the right screen.
There might be a way, like on your, where we all are, there's a share screen at the bottom of your screen, and there should be a little like carrot, I think, and you might have to look that way.
I can also try to assign her as co-host privileges, and that might allow her to share, because I can assign a participant to act as a host. Do you want me to try that?
Yeah.
Sorry, everyone.
No.
Patience.
I thought about it this morning and then promptly forgot, but also.
Oh, I should. Yep, that worked. I want to share.
Oh, look.
Did that work?
Did for me.
Everyone see the audit report and me scrolling on it? Is it changing?
Yes.
It is.
Okay. So this is the audit report. I'll be going through each section. Some of it I'll be going in more detail than others, but as I said, stop me if you have any questions. This is the auditor's, independent auditor's report. Down here is the actual opinion, and it's an unmodified opinion, which is the best opinion that you can have. And there were no findings and no audit adjustments, which is great, what we want. And there's other types of information that they're required to report for the required supplementary information and another government auditing standards opinion that they have, which also was unmodified. Continue down on page 3 here. This is the management's discussion and analysis, also called the MD&A. This is prepared by management and reviewed by the auditor to ensure the information is accurate. This is a great, if you don't have time to read the whole audit report, which I know isn't the easiest thing to read, this would be the place to go. It gives you a big overview of the financial statements and it provides information about Groveland with management's discussion as it goes through for any changes. And it compares last year to this year. So there's a lot of great information in it if you are interested. That would be the place I would go. But I believe that Pete wanted to say a couple words about this too. Is that right?
Yes. Let me... I feel like I can control your screen, but I don't think I can. I just...
What page do you want me to go to?
Okay, well, let me just... I'll give you a signal when it's time to go to the next page.
Sounds good.
But just basically, the thing that I thought was... this a little bit crosses over into more of a comprehensive type MD&A. Most MD&As... really have just basic stuff in it. I think we've kind of enhanced ours now to include some reference to district policies and how we conduct our financial statements. You know, how we're governed as far as policies and what affects us. For example, the budget and financial policies, investment policies. Go to the next page. Reserve policies, debt management, procurement, everything that basically is in place as a direction from the board or is contained in law or in accounting procedures that guide the way that we do our business. I have a section there that talks about the administrative expense or overhead expense that's then distributed. Next page. Those expenses, the office expenses that are distributed to the other funds and how that works. And then a description of the financial statements, what is a little bit different way of explaining than is contained in the financial statements. You really need to be somebody who reviews financial statements all the time to be able to speak that language. So this tries to translate that a little bit. And so that's why Pam was saying that's a good place to start. Next one, next page there. So we, when it comes to the overall look at how we're doing financially, one place that I like to dwell is the net position. Basically, are we going in the right direction? Are we going in the wrong direction? It's a little bit complex to explain because you can actually take your net position in the wrong direction a little bit, but and still be doing well. But there are a lot of factors involved, and this just basically summarizes that we've been continually going in the right direction now and being able to invest in infrastructure and also establish reserves that I'll talk about, and then continue to replace our assets and improve our financial position, which is a really good picture of doing the right thing. And I'll tell you, it's all because of our stepping out there with rate increases. And that is because we're not seeing the growth. If we were seeing huge amounts of growth, it would take the place of some of the rate increases, but we're not seeing that growth in number of customers. So keep going there. So there's we started in some graphics just to show that growth in the net position. And then there's additional specific information about and that support that the net position. Next page. The reserves. This is the first one where we've talked about the reserves, and Pam and Deb did a great job of pulling this together for me to help me explain what we did back with the rate increases on the water rate increases and the amounts that were included in those rate increases starting in 15-16 that established our first ever reserve. It is designated to go into capital equipment replacement in the water fund, and showing how much we have accrued in that account and then how much we have spent. So then the bottom line being 2.389111, so 2.4 million that we have funded into that designated reserve, and then $2.8 million worth of expenses have come out, with a good portion of that being grant funded. Without that cash going into it, we may not have been able to receive those grants. So this is a really important way to look at it, and also to be able to put our grants out there of how that affects our reserves. So we actually still have remaining, after doing the $2.8 million worth of projects in that period of time, $800,000 in that reserve. And that's in water. Sewer has was loosely set up in the rate increase discussions as a $300,000 contribution to capital outlay, capital equipment replacement. And that started in 18-19, so 600,000 into that, and then 995 out in expenses over that period of time, and then a portion of grants, so still remaining positive. So investing in the infrastructure, but also building the reserve, and then the 200,000, which wasn't specifically designated in the infrastructure reserve, that was specifically to go into a savings account until we identify in the master plan what we need to do. And so that money is there. So $373,000 into sewer reserve, basically. And we'll keep this active for the board to be able to report these reserves out. So hopefully that is helpful. We spent a lot of time focusing on that just because it's new and important. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then these are just graphs that support that, support the way that the revenue and expenses are allocated, and kind of give a high level overview. Keep going. And then when we get into the specific analysis, this is where I talk in quite a bit of detail about what we're doing to address any deficiencies that we've identified. It's important for our constituents to know that we're not just blindly going forward in a negative direction in fire. And that's the primary one. And that we are doing things like master planning and coming up with agreements with the county and other things to address these financial issues. And that, and the park, I'm happy to report that we're doing better in the park than I thought we were going to be. And we are, you know, we are addressing the needs of the park at the same time. So it's not quite as dire as I thought. And then go to next page. Just gives a little bit of detail about the projects that were completed with that, the reserve money and capital allocations. And we'll keep that list going into the future. Talk about the long-term debt and the refinancing that we did that saved money and allowed us to put money that was in a restricted account into paying that off sooner. A little bit about the CalPERS liability, and then discussion about the future is the last section of this report, where we talk about what's going on, and it kind of puts a lid on what the next steps are in the fire fund and park and water and sewer as well, with the master plan and any adjustments to rates or capital plans in the future as a result of that. So I'm out of breath now. So I just wanted to provide an overview. Thanks, Pam, for the time to go through that.
Of course. Okay. Is this big enough for you guys to see? I blew it up a little bit, so it was easier to see. Okay, good. So we'll start going through the financial statements and footnotes. There were no new accounting policies implemented this year. There were some that were supposed to be implemented by June 30, 2020, but because of COVID, it delayed a lot of the standards to be implemented later. So nothing was newly implemented. Prior year and current year are fairly comparable, but there was refinancing and a new bond this year. So that was the only big change. Just wanted to give that brief overview. So this is called a statement of net position. It's very similar to a balance sheet. This is also, it's the government-wide financial statement that's required by GASB. This is not the same basis of accounting that you're used to seeing in your budgets. This is full accrual. And normally with the budgets, you would see them in modified accrual. So the difference being is that this statement shows all long-term assets and long-term liabilities, such as fixed assets and the long-term debt here. But this is, it kind of combines all of the funds all together into one statement. This column, the governmental activities, is the park fund and fire fund. And this column, the business type activities, is the water, sewer, and Davis-Gorenstein fund. So that's how they're kind of combined on this statement. That's all I was going to go over on this statement, but you can see here that there is some long-term debt here, but most of this isn't due immediately, it's due over time. So even though it's large, it's not due immediately, and there's a healthy net position for the funds overall. Okay, I'm gonna go to the next page. This is the statement of activities. It's also an income statement. This is also government-wide. It has all the funds combined together. It does look kind of odd. The way that they have this set up is it has expenses here, and then any program revenues are shown here. And then down here are the general revenues that aren't related specifically to a program. And this is going to be the net change of those expenses and revenues for the program. And it's divided by the government activities, which is the park and fire fund. And this is the business activities, water, sewer, and Davis-Gorenstein fund. I know it looks kind of weird, but that's how it's set up to be by function and not like normally what you would see in the income statement. Okay. This next page, this is the governmental funds balance sheet. So this is only the fire fund and park fund. This is the same basis of accounting you normally see in your in the budgets. So this should look a little more familiar. It does not have long-term assets or liabilities on it. And you'll see that any of the fund balances left over are committed to that particular fund. This next page is the, it reconciles between the governmental balance sheet and the government-wide balance sheet for these two funds. Because the government-wide statements have long-term assets and long-term liabilities, this kind of shows how you get from the fund balance on modified accrual with all the long-term assets and liabilities to get to the ending governmental activities net position. So this number will tie back to the government-wide, and this number will tie back right here. And then this 1.4, if we go back up to the, it's right here, the net position. It's just a reconciling statement. Any questions so far? I know that it's a lot of government lingo. And this next page is the governmental funds statement of revenues, expenditures, and changes in fund balances, which is the, also known as an income statement. It shows that most of the funding here is from property taxes, and most of the expenditures are specifically for the, what the purpose of that fund is. And if we keep going down, this is a reconciliation similar to the other one, except that's reconciling the two income statements together. So it's taking the governmental fund balance and reconciling it back up to the governmental activities net position.
Pam, can you just go back one page real quick?
Yes.
Because
yes.
This is a pretty clear indicator when you see excess of revenue over expenditures and it's a negative 204,905 in fire. That's where our fund balance at the beginning of the year then is we make do our expenditures for the year, and we exceeded the amount of revenue that we had come in for that activity. And so it reduced the fund balance. And that was what I had stated as my concern in the MD&A, as well as just in our meetings over that, that going in that negative position by that amount each year, you can see with that fund balance is not going to get us very far. Mm-hmm. But we did have the Amador expense in this. And without that Amador expense, we would have been pretty flush. So it's not perfect, but it's a good viewpoint here, I think, of that fund. Okay. Sorry to interrupt your flow.
No, you're fine. I'm glad you said something. Okay. These next funds are for the business type activity funds. They're on full accrual basis, just like the government-wide. So there's really no difference between this statement and the column of that first statement we saw. That's because these funds are almost self-sufficient because they're funded by the charges for services that are used to pay for the expenses. So it's not reliant on governmental revenue like property taxes. You'll see here that it has the long-term assets and long-term liabilities already on this statement, and so there's no reconciliation like we saw before. And this is the income statement for the business type activity funds. You'll see that most of the revenue is from charges for services, and there's also some non-operating revenues for state revenue for small grants received here and there, but it's primarily funded through the charges for services. Any questions so far? Okay. This next page is the statement of cash flows. This is only for the business type activities, the water fund, the sewer fund, and the Davis-Gerinsky fund. This shows all the sources and uses of cash during the year, and it's broken up between operating activities, financing activities, non-capital and capital financing activities. So it just shows where the cash went during the year. And this is not required for the park fund or fire fund, which is why they're not included on here. And this is just another way of seeing the same information, and it's broken out by the balance sheet line items there. Okay, now I'll be going through the footnotes, and this I won't be going in as much detail, but I will stop here and there and things I think are important. But if you have any questions as I go through, feel free to stop me and I'll help you with any questions. Footnote one is all the significant accounting policies of the district. It goes in a lot of detail for accounting, reporting entity, the basis of presentation. It describes the fund financial statements and how they all work together, the basis of presentation, the fund accounting, and what each fund is for and what it's used for. It also describes the budget and budgetary accounting of it, use of estimates, information for the capital assets, the capitalization policy, and how what the range of years is for the useful life. This deferred outflows and inflows is related to the pension and OPEB liabilities. It's for activity that is being accounted for that's similar to assets and liabilities, but they're not quite assets and liabilities based on their definition. So they're called deferred outflows and deferred inflows. More information for pensions and OPEB, the other post-employment benefits. Keep going. Just a lot of detail information that is useful. And we continue down here to the footnote two for cash and investments. I'm sorry, cash and equivalents. This shows how the cash is broken out between non-restricted and restricted cash, and also what types of cash are held by the district. If it's cash on hand, money market, or with LAIF. So that is a good view to see how the cash is being held. Continue down, it describes investment policies, and all of the required disclosures of GASB for concentration of credit risk, custodial credit risk. Footnote three is for capital assets. It's broken up between both the park fund and fire fund, which is this statement. And then the next page is for the water fund and sewer fund. As Pete showed you on the MD&A, there's a whole list of all the additions if you want to see what the additions are for each fund. It describes that very well. And this shows how the depreciation expense is split between the two different funds. This next page is for the water fund and sewer fund. Shows all the additions, and there were some deletions this year. And the MD&A is a great place to go to see all of that detail of what was actually added this year. For long-term debt, this is also broken out by park fund and fire fund versus the other funds. The only long-term debt for the park and fire fund is compensated absences, and it's called long-term debt because it's not all due. We think it might all be due. It potentially could be all be due next year, but it's really whenever employees take vacation, it could be over a year, so that's why it's called a long-term liability. This next statement is for the water fund and sewer fund. This is where you'll see the refinancing and how it affected the debt. This is the new installment sale for the wastewater. So this was new. This is the wastewater refunding. And this refunded this debt right here. So you can see that this debt is zeroed out and there's a new addition right here and it's much less. I think that we describe it down, yeah, we do describe it down the footnotes, but the overall savings for the debt service payments was $483,000. So the refinance saved a lot of money. And the it's about a $71,000 economic gain in altogether. So it definitely was worth the cost of doing that. Any questions on this? Oops. Any questions on this? Okay. This shows the debt service requirements over the years. You can see that it's broken out for 5 years and then every 5 years after that. Footnote 5, this is for the pension plan liability. The district is part of a cost-sharing CalPERS plan. And on this page, you can see what the district's proportion of the liability is. It's very small, but it's actually a very large liability. This shows the change from, so one thing I should describe, since you'll see that these years aren't the year of the audit, because of the requirements for the actuary report and measurement periods are going to be slightly different than what the audit report is. So we have a June 30, 2020 year end, but this actuarial liability was measured as of June 30, 2019. It's always going to be a year behind because it takes time for CalPERS to push out all the information for the actuaries. And so it's always going to be a year behind, which is why there's deferred inflows and outflows. Those account for those slight changes during that year that are being accounted for accounting-wise that way. So the proportion, this is the measurement period that was used last year, and this is the measurement period used this year. So that's why those years are just 1 year off from what you would expect. And you can see that the change went up slightly, and that's because the there are new employees, but also the is just costing more. CalPERS is realizing that their estimates weren't quite what they used to, what they expected them to be, so cost is increasing. I'll continue going down. This gives information for what the actuary used for their assumptions, for what they think the investment rate of return will be, what the salary increases will be, what mortality they're expecting for retirees. And this is what the what their real rate of returns by asset is expected. And I wanted to point out this particular table right here. It's called the sensitivity table. This is showing that for the current discount rate of 7.15%, if the investments get better, if the investment rate is higher than what they expect, the liability will decrease to about 1.2 million. But if it's 1% worse, if the investments don't do as well as they are expecting, it can grow significantly to 4.1 million. So the actuaries' their assumptions can be very volatile, and they can change year to year, which can significantly change the liability year to year, depending on what their expectation is and what actually happens. Anybody have any questions on that so far? Okay.
Pam, just to let you and the board know, this is something that we are currently evaluating funding that as well. There are opportunities, and we may engage just a fresh set of eyes on the numbers to make sure we're seeing it right. Because when you look at the when you look at the PERS actuarial valuation and the amount, I mean, we're basically paying into something that keeps going up every year, and it doesn't drop down until I don't remember how many years out. It's another, I don't know, 20 years or something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a significant increase coming up. But again, like you said, it's based on the market. It's based on a lot of things. When you refinance, you're fixed. You know what that's going to be. You know, and so at least we're looking at that to see if that's going to work out for us too. So.
Okay. This next footnote 6 is the other post-employment benefits. We call it OPEB for short. It's very similar to the pension footnote, where it breaks out the description of the plan, benefits provided, what employees are covered. Well, this is actually unique to the OPEB plan. It shows the number of employees being covered and what their actual assumptions are, which you can see are much different than what CalPERS is planning for the pension plan, probably because they're different investments, but this is a little more conservative than CalPERS. And there was one change in assumption this year. They expected the healthcare cost rate to increase, so it increased from 5% up to 6%. for this measurement period because of the increase in healthcare costs. Shows what the assets are invested in, information for the discount rate, and if we continue going down, this is a good view of the net OPEB liability because this column shows what the total OPEB liability is, but the district does have fiduciary net position set aside to pay for that liability. So they have, there's a $1.4 million liability, but there's $1 million set aside specifically for that liability, which dropped it down to $418,000. That's why the liability is only $418,000. This is a sensitivity table like we saw with the pension plan. Shows that the discount rate of 6% is $418,000. But if the investments get better, it can drop the liability. But if they get worse, it can make it jump significantly. And they have a second sensitivity table for OPEB because it's so reliant on the healthcare costs. So if the healthcare costs increase, then the liability will increase. And then, of course, if they decrease, which who knows if that's going to ever happen, then that will decrease the liability. So you can see how volatile both of those assumptions can be. And if things don't go as planned, that can change next year's actuary liability calculations. So I want to point that out. This is footnote 7, it's a risk management footnote. This shows what JPA joint powers authority the district is part of to help cover any liabilities that could come up. This is their shortened version of their balance sheet and income statement. Okay, those are the footnotes and a very brief overview. Does anyone have any questions so far on those? Okay, now we'll get into the required supplementary information. This first statement is for the budgetary comparison schedules of the governmental funds, which is the park fund and the fire fund. It shows what the budget amounts are, what the actual amounts ended up being, if there's any variance between the final budget and the actual amount. This is for the park fund, same information. If we continue down, this is the schedule of changes in the district's net OPEB liability and related ratios, which is a mouthful for a statement name. But this eventually will have 10 years worth of data. It's maybe a trend analysis information. Because it was only implemented a few years ago, that's why only 3 years are shown. But it gives you a good visual of how the liability has changed over the years. You can see that this dropped significantly from 2018 to 2019, and that's because the number of employees covered dropped. It went from 27 down to 22, which affected the liability. But and the investments also were better last year for a lot, other than the year before where they were not very good. Continue down. This is the schedule of the district's proportionate share of the pension liability. So because GASB 68 for the pension was implemented years ago, it's showing 6 years of information. And you can see that the proportionate share of the district has increased each year very slightly, which has increased the liability that is their proportionate share as well. And then continue down, this is the schedule of the district's contributions for the pension. These are the actually required contributions that CalPERS has said that they need to contribute. And as the proportionate has increased, the contribution has increased as well over the years. That is the end of the audit report.
That was an abrupt end.
Huh?
I said that was an abrupt end.
Well, yeah, it just kind of ended.
It's all I was going to say is this, this is the liability number, that sharp increase in contribution amounts that we're going to try to get a handle on and stabilize You know, we may, it may be out over a longer period of time, but at a low enough interest rate that there's a huge amount of savings, or we can go with a little bit higher level and get it paid off sooner. There'll be a number of options that we'll consider, but those are big numbers to see, you know, those are things that are totally out of our control.
Yeah. Yes. It definitely is. I think that, yeah, this is the net. So it includes both the money set aside and the actual liability. So we've been seeing this across the board. Everyone's liabilities are increasing, all of our clients. So it's just a trend, unfortunately, for everyone. Is there any parts of the report that you want me to go revisit, or you guys have no questions? Any questions? Awesome. Well, I think that's all is there anything else you want me to cover, Pete?
I want to make sure I lost my mouse. Good. All right. No, as far as what I was looking to see, you've got it. Very much appreciated.
Of course. I hope you guys have a good rest of your day.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Pam. It was nice seeing you again.
You too. It was virtually. I missed driving out there today. It was such a beautiful drive from where I live.
Oh, yeah, and it's a beautiful day. You missed the snow. We had snow on Sunday.
Wow.
Sunday, yeah. Everything was iced up this morning. It's cold.
Yeah, it's cold here too. It's very chilly.
Any directors have any final questions or comments?
I'd like to just say, Pam, a lot of very good information, very well displayed and explained. You did a great job. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pam.
You're welcome.
Jennifer, any comments from the public?
None that I see.
Okay. Anyone else present want to add anything to this before she leaves? I don't see any hands. Okay, that's it. Thanks again. Great.
Bye. Thank you.
Take care.
Well, that was great. Okay, let me get this paper mess off of here and we will move on to our next item.
If there was a way to capture the success, you know, the financial statement success, the financial, the recovery and the efforts and where we're going with this thing in just something understandable to people, that's certainly what we want to convey. It's been, in addition to everything else, we've been doing a great job financially.
Glad to hear it. That's way good to hear. Good, that goes on that page. Okay, so we are up to 6A. Authorization.
Do we need to do a motion on this?
I'm sorry. Are we accepting? We need to accept this. Recommended actions. Thank you very much, John.
I make a motion to accept the fiscal year 2019-2020 audit financial statement.
I'll second it.
Okay. Any other comments? Jennifer, would you like to take the vote?
Moved by Director Armstrong, seconded by Director Mora to accept the fiscal year 1920 audited financial statements. I'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong?
Hey.
Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
And the motion carries unanimously.
Thanks, everybody. Okay, now we will go on to 6A, authorization. I'm sorry, where's 6A? Authorization to submit an application to Cal OES for the Special District Power Resiliency Grant Program to authorize the general manager to sign the application, related agreements, and certifications.
I will. I think this may go pretty quickly, I hope, because this application was due in such short order, and the level of effort kept growing to get it right. And it was not on a prior agenda. However, we had talked about it. And there's really no, there's no matching funds that are being contributed by the district to this. So I took the liberty of getting the application in and submitted on time. And this is a procedural approval to basically approve our signatures on the application. And that's pretty much about it. And questions related to the project.
Well, that was a fun thing to do.
To try to get the signatures on the, you know, I knew everything was going to fall apart on the last day.
My Adobe died. It took 2 days to do it. Rachel had to stop in, and my signature is minuscule. But it worked. We got it.
I move to approve and ratify the submission of an application to Cal OES for Special District Power Resiliency Grant Program, and to authorize the general manager to sign the application and related agreements and certifications.
I'll second it.
Okay. Anybody else have any comments? Okay, Jennifer?
I don't see any public comment, so I'll now call for the vote. It's been moved by Director Swan, seconded by Director Armstrong, to approve and ratify the submission of an application to Cal OES for the Special District Power Resiliency Grant Program and authorize the general manager to sign the application related agreements and certifications. I'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
The motion carries unanimously.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Jennifer. Item 6B.
Also, just thank you for staying on top of that. I mean, that's good. This is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, we pushed to get the money in the budget, and CSDA did a fantastic job and really raised the value of special districts to get us included in the OES funding. So, proud to participate. Now let's get that grant.
Yeah. Okay, adoption of a resolution approving the revised cooperative fire protection agreement between the district and Cal Fire, removing the Amador plan funding requirements and authorizing the general manager to sign.
Well, need I say more? This we talked a little bit about this at the last board meeting. And this was presented. It's the same contract, just less the Amador expenditures. So there is a reduction in potential expense if we were to fully fund the Amador estimated cost for each of the 3 years of the contract, a savings of up to $830,577. You know, that number fluctuates based on what their actual billing is for that and how long the fire season is and everything else. But we are very proud to have this relationship with the county and their participation in funding the Amador costs going forward. So look forward to your approval of this revised agreement.
Anybody have any? Yes, John?
I was just going to move.
That's fine. Go ahead and move.
I move to adopt resolution 49-2020, approving the revised cooperative fire protection agreement between the district and Cal Fire, removing the Amador plan funding requirements and authorizing the general manager to sign.
I'll second that.
Now, do we have any comments or questions from the directors or anybody else that's present? Andy, how's everything going at your end?
Very well, thank you. I just wanted to say that this is in large part due to the hard work that Pete has done in educating the county, representing the board in the district as far as the services that are required and the part that the county needs to pay in the fire protection services up there. And they recognize that, and that is a priority of the CAO and the board to remedy that. We'll see how this moves forward with the TOT passing and the potential TOT from these other projects. Mm-hmm. So hopefully we'll see some greater presence of county fire or cooperation with Groveland in the next few years.
Thank you. We're looking forward to that.
Okay. Yeah, I'll just, as a comment, I just say this is a wonderful, I mean, the amount of work you had to go through to get the Board of Supervisors on board with this, I have no idea how, if you'd asked me that this was likely to happen 4 years ago, I would have thought there was not a possibility. So nice, you know, thank you, Board of Supervisors, but nice work on the educational front.
Yes, absolutely. It's another feather in Pete's hat.
Yeah, we appreciate Pete and Chief for all the work you guys have done. This is awesome.
Thank you, Chief, for your efforts.
Yeah, he's in the throw of it. He's definitely right in the middle, and has been very, very helpful for me to help me understand the way that that Cal Fire functions and the Amador Station functions and what the county's up against and everything else. I mean, I just really had I had all the right tools, and Andy and his cooperation and the trust and relationship we've built. And it's what makes it work.
It couldn't have been easy to wear both hats on this, Andy. But you did it. Thank you. You rocked at that meeting. I did see that county meeting. It was fabulous.
Thank you.
Yeah, good thank team. You.
We've got a good team all the way around.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's been moved by Director Armstrong, seconded by Director Swan to adopt Resolution 49-2020, approving the revised cooperative fire protection agreement between the district and Cal Fire, removing the Amador plan funding requirements, and authorizing the general manager to sign. I will now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
The motion carries unanimously.
Yay. Okay. Item 6C, adoption of a resolution approving an updated and amended miscellaneous fee schedule, adding fees and deposits related to the district encroachment permit process.
Okay, I'm going to focus your attention on the section of this that's related to engineering fees. And that, if someone can call out the page number on that, is where we have quite a bit of added.
89.
Mm-hmm. The main thing here is that we've had a number of requests for both easement abandonments, which we have had a fee in place for, but most recently another easement acceptance request, which takes some legal and engineering and operational review as well as administrative time. And that occurs when we require someone to dedicate an easement in another location that works better for us when they do abandon a public utility easement, and we can allow that to occur. But the other one is an encroachment permit. That is a that is a growing business for the district, not by our doing, but we have to definitely give appreciation to the Pine Mountain Lake folks as they are requiring that people that are encroaching on easements and different things actually secure an encroachment permit with the district before PML will approve of the project. So they're asking applicants for permits through PML to go through our process to make sure that they can get an encroachment permit if they're in an easement. And what that is doing is, you know, if you can imagine, we have sewer lines going along the edge of the lake above the high water mark in people's backyards or their front yard if they're, you know, facing the lake and that's their front yard. And people have built decks, people have put in sheds, people have walkways, they have structures, they have fences, stairs, different things that cross or, would make it very difficult in many cases for us to access that line in the event that we had to replace a sewer line that's in that location. So we are identifying encroachments as we come across them, but primarily what's going on right now is that, like I said, PML is requiring this as part of any approvals on their part. And we have five of them active right now, and it takes a lot of work. We will allow people to do things like build a deck in an easement where a sewer line or water line exists, and even across the top of it, so long as we're guaranteed that they're not going to damage it. They agree to pay any cost if they do damage anything, and that they agree in the permitting process to immediately remove any improvements at the request of the district if we've got to do any construction. And if they don't remove it, we go in and remove it and charge them the cost to remove it, and we don't rebuild it. So it's kind of a detailed process that we're working through here. It's been in the district policy since 2010. It has been only intermittently in the past applied. And it does take quite a bit of effort to go through the process of evaluation and documentation. So we have a proposed new fee for that. There'll be an application fee, an administration fee, and then the applicant pays all the recording costs because it will be recorded on the property if it's a permanent easement or permanent encroachment. And there will be a engineering deposit of $575 that is refundable if we don't use it. If we use more, they will pay the actual cost anyway. We'll just add it to their account. So that's the purpose of this. We think it's a good start. We'll see how it works out. If we exceed that 575 or if 240 is not enough for the application fee, we'll find out. There will be instances where we say no, because we just absolutely cannot allow someone to build, it might either damage, you know, you can't move a permanent structure, let's put it that way. So somebody's house is built on a sewer line, that's not acceptable. Because, you know, that's a permanent structure and would take too long to demolish and would be a fight in court, where it's a deck or concrete patio or stairs or, you know, garden shed or something, not as much of a concern. And again, the policy is already in place for that. This is just adding a fee to that. And then there are also policies that were in place related to new development projects, where in the miscellaneous, we had it in the policy, in the format for the application, there was a fee included in the policy, but it never was included in any type of separate action and a fee schedule adopted by the board. So we've pulled that that new development application fee, which is a $2,500 engineering deposit, $500 administrative fee, and $200 application fee. We pulled that in here. So it's been in place. We have charged it in the past, but it wasn't included in this fee schedule. So I'm open for questions. I think that was pretty clear.
So I just have just legally speaking, I mean, this is... we have an ordinance somewhere that allows us to have this fee schedule that we just passed by resolution? I mean, it seems like there has to be, I mean, we have a, in the water ordinance, for example, there's a whole series of fees for connections and that sort of thing. What is the governing legal basis for this fee schedule?
The fee schedules just have to be adopted by resolution, and there needs to be a reasonable relationship between the fee and the service that's provided with that fee. In accordance with Prop 26 and some other requirements, but in the government code related to CSDs, it's just a matter of adopting a fee schedule by resolution.
So this is actually in the government code itself. Yeah. We're authorized to do this. Yep. Okay. Well, that's good enough.
Yeah, and again, it's not a property-related fee, so it's not something that's a mandatory, hey, we're going to charge you a $200 application fee just because you have a water connection. It's something that someone is coming in and requesting a service above and beyond what their neighbor might be. Yeah.
No, I understand that. I don't have a problem with it. I just was not sure if we needed to be looking at modifying ordinance or something, but evidently not. So,
Bob, it's a good question, and you're the good historian, having the experience on these matters, because unfortunately there were times when we adopted ordinances, fee schedules by ordinance, or just certain charges by ordinance, and then they were amended by motion. And at some times, and so we do need to reconcile anything that's related to money in our ordinances, our policies, and our fee schedule, and pull all the fee schedule stuff into this fee schedule and do it with the budget each year. That'd be probably the cleanest way to do it, because it really doesn't need to be separately. The only thing that needs to be a money amount in an ordinance is related to civil penalties and violation penalties and those kind of things. That's where the ordinance requirements come into play. So
I have a question.
Capacity charges too. But that's a different topic.
Okay. Some of the fees on here, are we actually, I know we did quite a few meter rereads this month, and we always seem to do. Are we charging these customers $30 to reread their meter? I know it's a fee, but.
I'll give it to Rachel or.
Yeah, sorry, I was trying to unmute. When we are doing the meter audits during the rereads period of the month, we do not go out because that's part of our audit where mm-hmm. we double check the read to make sure that we are accurate. However, okay. when somebody wants us to go back out there to double check it after we already checked it, then we do charge that $30 fee.
Okay. So is that the reread that Louis has on their report?
No, those rereads are probably going to be associated with our internal water audit.
Okay, got it. Okay. Yeah. What, Bob?
Nothing.
Oh,
okay. I was just agreeing with that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, I'll move to adopt Resolution 50-2020, giving an updated and amended miscellaneous fee schedule, adding fees and deposits related to the district encroachment permit process.
I'll second it.
Thank you. Any director comments or questions? Jennifer, any members of the public? Nope. Any members of anybody that else is on here today? Nope. Okay.
It's been moved by Director Swan, seconded by Director Armstrong to adopt Resolution 50-2020, approving an updated and amended miscellaneous fee schedule, adding fees and deposits related to the district encroachment permit process. I will now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
The motion carries unanimously.
Thank you. Item 6D, consideration of authorization to negotiate a scope of work and fee with NBS for the preparation of the analysis report and documentation necessary for the formation of the Community Facilities District for new development within the district.
Love those mouthful agenda items. Huh? So anyway, provided a little bit of background on the staff report. Basically, we've been there and done that as far as looking at financial consultants for the development impact fee schedule. We have had a good experience so far, very thorough grilling by NBS and good explanations on their part about what they're doing and how they're approaching the fee schedule preparation. And at the same time, I'm very familiar with NBS and their experience and background in the preparation of community facilities districts. And I would like the authority to be able to negotiate a scope of work and fee directly with them that would come back to the board, as it's not currently in the budget, but we have authorized moving forward with preparation of that community facilities district. So this will just save me a couple months of time and many hours of work when I already know who I think I'd like to work with on preparation of this CFD.
Okay. Any director comments? I think that's an agreement.
If the committee is still in agreement, the folks that did the original evaluation, then I think there's no reason for us to
absolutely
duplicate. Absolutely.
Me too.
I move to authorize the general manager to negotiate a scope of work and fee with NBS for preparation of the analyst reports and documentation necessary for the formation of community facilities district for new development within the district.
I will second that motion.
Thank you. Any other comments from anybody? Jennifer?
No public comment.
No, thank you. Okay, let's call for the motion.
It's been moved by Director Armstrong, seconded by Director Edwards, to authorize the general manager to negotiate a scope of work and fee with NBS for the preparation of the analysis, reports, and documentation necessary for the formation of a community facilities district for new development within the district. Now I'll call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
And the motion carries unanimously.
Okay, item 6E, adoption of a resolution adopting the 2016 Tuolumne Stanislaus Integrated Regional Water Management Plan.
Okay, it's not lengthy, it's a tongue twister.
It's just huge words, yeah.
Anyway, this is the district has been here before. We were one of the inaugural members that worked with the initial preparation of the plan in 2013. Director Edwards is participating as our representative on the JPA and Watershed Advisory Committee, and this is an update that was done. It's dated, the file is dated 2017. It's called the 2016 update, but needs to be adopted by our board to be eligible to receive the grant that we have already, that's in process. The contract is being prepared at the state right now.
Well, that's a pretty compelling argument right there.
Yeah, exactly.
I move to approve resolution 51-2020, adopting the 2016 Tuolumne Stanislaus Integrated Regional Water Management Plan.
I'll second that. One of us will second it.
Any comments? No. Any comments from the members that are here today? Any comments from the public? No. We're excited to do this for you, Pete. We can take the roll now.
Yes. It's been moved by Director Edwards, seconded by Director Swan to approve Resolution 51-2020, adopting the 2016 Tuolumne Stanislaus Integrated Regional Water Management Plan. I will now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Yes.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
The motion carries unanimously.
I'll just remark, if nobody, I mean, I haven't read the update, but I did read the 2013 one. It's actually an interesting document, but man, it's big. I mean, if you want to read it, budget a couple of days.
It is. It's lengthy.
Pete has all his reading material laid out for the next 5 years. Well, thanks, everybody. We have managed to get through this in no time flat.
Yep.
Good job.
Much longer.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone.
You're welcome. Thanks for all the hard work. This was a
stay warm, everybody.
A giant packet to put together.
No kidding. I picked it up and I was like, good Lord, I should have brought like a little roller bag to carry it out.
Hey, Rachel's doing it all on her own now.
And that didn't even have the Irwimp in it.
Exactly.
Yeah. We make those decisions. Yeah. I think it was the financial statements that made up the big chunk of that. But
yeah. But good job, Rachel. Really, really. You are.
Well done, young lady.
Jen and everybody else, I went to the first, my first movies in the park the other night. And it's like, it's pretty darn cool. Well, it was actually a little cool since it's fall, but
but the hot chocolate was good. But yeah, it was great.
We went through a ton of it.
Louis cooking hot dogs and it was the growls in the little booth. It was wonderful. Seeing Yogi on the movie screen.
Yogi appreciates that. Yeah,
it was great. I can't wait till the spring.
Louis, are you still on?
I am.
Put your video back on a second, or I'll wait till we're done.
Can we just announce the adjourn time so I can stop the recording?
Yes, absolutely. We will now adjourn the meeting. Thank you, everybody. It is 1:18 or 12:18. 12:18. Thank you.